Blog Talk Radio.
Off the Post is back. I'm Russ Cohen, and I'm with Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good, Russ. Had a little bit of a break here, and I think we're ready to roll here.
Yeah, we're ready to roll. Let's get right down to it. The the Babcock watch, or we're on the Babcock clock, whatever you want to call it. And
I don't
want to
call the other one. You want to call the other hashtag, which somebody else came up with, which is kind of not so nice.
And yeah, the Babcock was good. I'll go with that one. And the funny thing about it is he's sort of like this supermodel right now that is switching agencies and fielding phone calls, and he'll wait until, what, next Wednesday to make a decision. And I got to admit, I'm already tired of it.
I think a lot of people, I think your sentiments are certainly shared. Although, again, we kind of had the feeling that we, a lot of people, I think, maybe thought it was going to be even longer than this. And the fact that it's...
No,
the,
I thought so initially, too, but that didn't still mean
but
I wouldn't
sounds
be
like,
tired
but,
of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, again, my gut, I mean, my read on this is that I think it's down to a couple teams now at this point. It's Detroit and whoever the other potential suitor might be. And I think just, you know, I know Joe Yurden from NHL.com really sort of he's not saying it in terms of saying he knows 100%, but it's, he seems based off the read that it sounds like he thinks he's going back to Detroit. And it wouldn't shock me at all. I think it would. The Red Wings do have a lot of good things in place. Certainly Ilitch can afford the price tag on him.
He may just want to be courted just to kind of see what's out there. I mean,
I
want to
feel nice. I want to feel wanted, you know, appreciated. I want the coat my fraternity to feel appreciated. And it's like, I guess so. I mean, but
now they have Dylan Larkin coming. They've got Anthony Mantha coming. It's not like Detroit's barren.
No, they're definitely not barren. And the fact of the matter is, again, they do have a new arena that's being built. And, I mean, Detroit's got a solid base. I mean, the team that's in the conference finals right now, Tampa Bay, got all they could handle from Detroit in that first-round series. It all takes one little bounce, and you never know. Detroit could potentially be the team playing the Rangers right now in the East Finals. They're a good team. I think everybody knew that. I mean, when I made my pick for that series, I thought it was going to be, you know, it had added it six games for Tampa, and Tampa had to pull out of a hole to get to where they are now. So, again, good team in Detroit, and I would not surprise me at all if Babcock goes back there. You know, somebody else, you never know. Like somebody slides in last second here if he gets back and from Worlds, and you never know. Some things, you know, he may get blown away by something. But my read is, I think,
yeah,
it's
we'll
down
say
to
right
down
now
a couple
he's fielding
teams.
Phone calls, and you know he wants to see who's going to take him out to dinner and who's going to fly him on their jet. And so anyhow, we move on, and so we'll talk about the Eastern Conference Finals now.
Let's do it.
The interesting thing is, as you know, I thought the worst matchup for the Rangers was the Canadiens. And, you know, since they've been eliminated, I never had to pick against the Rangers. It's just sort of worked out this way. And and although I do want to remind people, because I got some snarkiness on my Facebook page, I did pick against the Rangers last year against Pittsburgh, and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I picked them again to beat the Canadiens, and then I picked against them again in the Cup. So, you know... Yeah. I do still have to call him as I see him, and this is an interesting matchup.
I mean, even, you know, you've written Ranger books, but at the same time, you know, you have to call it. You have to call it with your head and not your heart. And, I think it was pretty obvious at that point that the Kings were going to be a very tough matchup for New York. And that being said, it was for five games. It was still, you know, a great series, and I think the Rangers for five games gave the Kings all they could handle. And now, again, they got a whole, as they go into this series, they've got a whole lot of motivation. And I know we don't like to talk too much about momentum, but, you know, when you win three games in a row coming from behind 3-1, it's going to be really interesting for a team like Tampa. But, again, Tampa, I think, is a whole other challenge as well. I guess what we have to look at with Tampa is the experience factor with a relatively young roster going up against a veteran, a veteran-laden Rangers team with some players that are really just on a roll right now. Certainly, Kreider was a force in the latter part of that series.
Yeah, not every game,
again,
but in the latter part for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But
not every
dead
game,
spots
but in the latter
too.
Part of the series, he became a beast. What's that?
But they have dead spots, too. You know, Martin St. Louis has turned into a dead spot in the lineup. He and Vinny LeCavalier seem to have, died on the ice at the same time, for lack of a better term. Dan
Boyle.
But New
York's fortunate enough that they have guys, have young, some of the younger players that have stepped into the fray and have done well.
Yeah, JT Miller stepped up in that role and did well. Dan Boyle has not been good. He got rocked in the head. I know he practiced, but that's still not a 100% guarantee that after practice he felt great and he's going to play. And I got to tell you something. There's a part of me that says, if Dan Boyle sat a game and they had Hunwick in there, I would rather see what that looks like, because against Tampa, I think that would actually be better, because Boyle's been a little slow and he, as a trigger man on the power play, has missed a lot of shots. So those are the only real negatives about the Rangers. And Yandel's been sort of sloppy, but not terrible, but not good. And
Yandel's
so,
actually shown very much his, he's been in the postseason before with the Coyotes and has gone deep, but there's times where he's looked, it's strange, like you say, because he's been in the playoffs, he's been deep. I remember, when it was still the Phoenix Coyotes, when they got to the conference finals against LA, the first time LA won the cup, he was with them. And now you look at it and you say, there's times where he looks like a playoff rookie, but again, this is, these are some, versus the West. I mean, we prop up the West as much as we do, as supposedly the superior conference, but the East has got, some close quarter combat that can surprise someone if they haven't been involved in it before. And I think there's times that Yandel looks like he's been a little, the intensity of it may have been a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, he's moved the puck well. He's had some bad turnovers, as we know he's had his whole career. But you know what the problem is?
Mm-hmm.
You can't have 4 points in 12 games and get paid the money he does as an offensive defenseman. And so that's been really a bad deal so far for the Rangers. Yeah, it's a bad deal
really
so far for the Rangers.
Series,
we'll see if it gets better.
That was the dice roll that they had, though.
It was. And then, look, we get to Rick Nash, and while he may have scored his second goal, this is a guy that still only has 6 playoff goals for the Rangers in 49 games. I mean, so he, 7 points in 12 games, it's not acceptable for Rick Nash. I know everybody says, hey, but he's back checking, and hey, but he's doing, yeah, I get that. But you know what? He's got to step up. He's got to score. And especially as they move on here, because it's just not going to last with the other guys. But I'll tell you what, with Tampa, Stamkos now as a winger scares me. He does, because that's with Filippola, I think he was there for the last Red Wings championship, right? I think before
before he became free agent. He has a cup ring with Detroit.
Yeah. So he's wily, and that was a good move by Cooper, an astute move, and look, Palat and Tyler Johnson, and Kucherov actually scares the crap out of me as a player.
Yeah.
For anybody, he should scare the crap out of him. That goal that he scored against Carey Price to make it 1-0 was the slightest of room on the short side that Price thought he had covered over his shoulder, and he's a big goalie. That's a tough shot, man.
It is. And again, Montreal's, as we all know, Montreal's a pretty good, a good team. That they were able to really sort of at times, granted they had their slip ups and when they were trying to close it, when they tried to close out, part of that's a little bit of part of that was a little bit of inexperience, and I think they sort of needed to have their feet held a little more to the fire, and in Game 6 they definitely responded. Bishop's going to be an interesting factor in this series as well. He's had some great moments. Made some tremendous stops. He's also had some moments that you sort of still question on occasion his you kind of question him at times. He's had great moments, but he's been up and down. Whereas again, you're going up against, and now he's looking at the other end of the ice, and he's looking at the gold standard of goaltending in the NHL. And you don't worry. I mean, granted, a goalie isn't supposed to focus in on their own game, but it's kind of tough not to look at that other end of the ice. But again, he went up against Carey Price, and Price was,
mm-hmm.
you know, was excellent. It was really good. It's, you know, with the exception of the last game, I think he may have had some rough moments. But he's faced off against some pretty good goaltenders in the playoffs so far. Mrazek with Detroit was on a pretty good roll, and Price has got a pedigree. But now, but again, this is going from silver group to gold group.
Bishop still got a .931 save percentage. He's still got a .931.
He's making the stops at the end of the day. He's had some moments. He's had the head-scratch moments, and you worry against a team like New York going up to Madison Square Garden. You know, he's really going to have to his percentage is great, and no question about that, but – you know, those moments now where he has hiccups are going to be even more magnified now, especially in this series, because New York is so opportunist. You know, we saw against the Capitals were at times in that overtime all over New York, and then it just, that one moment, New York is so opportunistic, and they take advantage of it. So they're going to have to be really strong
Victor
against
Hedman,
them.
I got to mention Hedman.
Yeah.
He's got 6 points in this series. And so far in the Stanley Cup playoffs, he's doing pretty well. He's had his ups and downs, but I have to tell you this. And it took me a little while because I looked at this and I was like, wow, he's actually got 15 points in 35 games. I mean, considering he's a 24-year-old and he has just sort of developed in the last two seasons, those are pretty gaudy numbers, and he can knock your head off too. So he's another weapon that they have, and Braden Coburn really does solidify them. He really does, and especially he knows how to play the Rangers. So I got to tell you, this series is going to 7 in my mind, because I could give you a scenario where Stamkos wins a game, where Tyler Johnson wins a game, where, you know, Lundqvist gets either a shutout or a one-goal game, wins one or two at the Garden, and I can give you this scenario, and then I think the Rangers will win in 7 because I think Lundqvist will have to win his 11th elimination game at MSG, and I think he'll do it. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it goes, I mean, if it goes to a 7th game, it's tough to pick against New York. I have to, in my mind, I'm sort of a little bit boxed in. I think if the Rangers are playing any other opponent, I would lean New York. But again, I'm a little bit hemmed in because again, Tampa was my pick to represent the East this year, and I do need to stay consistent with that.
They were
again,
my pick, and then I got off them. Half season, I got off them. I was like, I don't know if this is the right makeup. And Callahan was having a great year, but there was something weird about them. And then all of a sudden, they gelled. They did.
Yeah, it really gelled, and they gelled at the right time, certainly. And I think they're a well put together team, Tampa. And I have to stay on the pick. And again, I know this sort of sounds like I'm hemming and hawing here, but Tampa, they're going to win the series. They got to win it in 6. So I'm going to stick with that pick and say Tampa surprises and they win it in 6. If it goes to a 7th game, it's tough to pick against New York, but I'm going to say Tampa in 6.
Okay. And that's fair. I mean, it really could go that way. So now we go to the other series, and it's funny because this is the one rare year where I've been picking against the Blackhawks, even though preseason someone asked me who's going to the Cup, and I said the Blackhawks. But then there were just times this year where I just was not thrilled with their goaltending, and I'm still not thrilled with the goaltending package. And Anaheim is this sort of team that really doesn't get any respect from anybody but their own fan base, it seems. And they've had an up-and-down year. Look, I saw a game at the Garden maybe just a month ago where I want to say they gave up 7 goals, and the Rangers just lit them up, right? And then after that, they've been really good again because they had a great season, and they have good defense. The biggest thing they have going for them is they have Perry and Getzlaff and Kessler, and when you have a couple of big centers like that, and you could roll two lines like that with big centers that could shut you down and also really put pressure on opposing teams' defense, I think this is more than the Blackhawks have had to face this entire playoff run, too, don't you think?
I would certainly agree to a point, but it's also on the flip side of that, Anaheim has not gone up against a team that has the speed of the Chicago Blackhawks. In their first round series, certainly going into their second round series when they played against Calgary. Calgary was a scrappy bunch, but Chicago, much like you know, that Tampa's going up a whole nother level playing the Rangers, so too are the Ducks going up against a whole nother level against Chicago. And it's tough to pick against the Blackhawks because of their experience. This is where where Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry have to become Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews in the playoffs. I mean, they've been really good, but again, now this is prime time here. This is the best, you know, one of the best teams they have to play left. Goaltending is what it is, Chicago has been able to.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, actually, Perry's
leading. But Getzlaf certainly has been. Mm-hmm.
Perry's leading everybody in points in playoffs. Silverberg is actually more than a point a game.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Beleski may be their most dangerous guy.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, he's very much, to me, a really dangerous player for Chicago. He's kind of, in my mind, he's their answer to Brendan Saad. He's that guy. He's Saad.
Hanging in the weeds.
And if he can continue to do that, what's that?
He's like hanging out in the weeds.
He's gonna be the guy who's gonna get you when you're focused in on the big guys, and then all of a sudden here he comes in out of nowhere, Beleski, and again, just one of the better finds that Murray had in terms of to bringing into that roster. It's again, the Ducks. There's something about it. They're playing with like a real. And again, I know this is a typical cliche, but they're playing with a serious chip on their shoulder. Like they're
a big
really,
team. I mean,
Patrick Maroon. They're a big team.
Patrick Maroon, 6'3", 230.
Yeah, they're very big.
He's got 7 points in 9
playoff
games.
And they were big
when
they won the
Cup. Did we ever dream he could do that? Did we ever think that? No way.
No, definitely not. They're a big team. Kind of in the mold of what they were when they won the Cup before. The only difference is, again, is that they may not necessarily, you know, you may not have the Niedermeyers and the Prongers of the world, but Fowler, Beauchemin, a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Beauchemin's got his, obviously, Cup experience. Fowler is such an important part of that blue line. It's you look at the Ducks and it's just, you know, Chicago's going to have their hands full. Just like that. I mean, if they think, oh, thank God it's not the Kings, be careful what you wish for in this circumstance.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one for them.
And Duncan Keith is still great. I mean, look, we're not Toews, Kane.
Yep.
We're not taking anything away from the Blackhawks, but I think this is a really tough matchup again for them. And I honestly think the goaltending is going to do them in. I think, I kind of like Anaheim in 6 in this one. I know it's going to sound like heresy. I know people are going to be like, oh, and I have a good friend who is a Hawks fan, and I've been picking against him, and he's probably happy that I'm continuing. But at some point, I just think this train's going to stop for Chicago based on their goaltending. If they go into the Stanley Cup with this goaltending, then maybe I'll turn around on it. But it's one of these things where Crawford is up and down, and he's got Darling looking over his shoulder, and I just can't think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, at the same time, the benefit for Quenville is that he can feel comfortable with Darling going back in that if he needs to. But again, he had ice water in his veins in that game 3 shutout against the Wild. He looked as good as I had honestly had seen him at times during the playoffs. I think I think Crawford's starting to get himself back into that mindset. That's at least my read here. Again, his first round was obviously a very was as up and down as against Nashville, and again he lost when he lost that position. But I think sometimes with that level of adversity, and you get your job back, you begin to lock in a little bit more. And again, he's got experience. He's got the experience before. He's been in these situations. He's won a Stanley Cup before. It's tough for me to pick against Chicago at this point. I still think the squad, you know, the one area where I look at that I focus in on as much for Chicago is I do get a little concerned about their defensive depth over time here. You're going to be asking basically.
Oh, it's an issue. David Rundblad, an adventure.
Rundblad's definitely an adventure. As much as people like to hype him a few years ago, he's still he's young, but he's very much an up and down guy. You're asking Timonen to absorb a little more maybe than you originally expected in this circumstance. So basically,
I think Timonen's done the way he looks. Do you think he's going to really do anything?
I think he's playing to whatever his remaining capability is at this point.
Yeah.
He's solid enough, I think, as an if he's your number six and you limit the ice time as much as possible. The problem is when you lose Roosevelt, you know, he had over seven. I think he was almost like 17 and a half minutes, I think, per game in postseason. That's the problem there. Roosevelt, you know, with that injury, really sort of leaves an opening there where you're now going to ask Keith Seabrook, Chalmerson, and Oduya to play roles that are much great. You know, they're going to ask him to play a heavy load. I think Keith is like almost 30 minutes on average, like 30 minutes a game at times. The other three are around like 23, 24 minutes a game. You're asking, that's a big load to ask them to handle. And then you look at what Anaheim's able to roll out there on their blue line. You know, like I said, you got Lindholm, Boschman. I mean, they're healthy. Fowler, Dupre, Vatanen, Stoner. And Stoner was has been next. I really like Clayton Stoner for them. He's been strong for them in his own end. They're going full six guys. So that's the area, if you're going to ask me. It's not as much about Crawford as it is I'm worried about Anaheim really exposing Chicago's defensive depth here at this point. So I'm going to still lean Chicago in this series, but it's going to go the full seven. And this is the series where if Chicago does survive and Chicago gets through this series, that we may see them potentially be out of gas by the time they get to the final. And that's where the concerns were. I think that's my pick. I'm going to say Chicago in seven, but it's good. They're going to be bled white in this series, I think.
There's no question about that. I will also say this about Rumblad, you know, knowing and tracking him for a while. He's 24, so we do know that some guys develop late. He's been a minus every year of his career except for with Chicago. He's got 14 points of his career 23 in 104 games, and I still see the hiccups. I still don't see where he's been solid, and so, like, you know what Quenneville's going to do. He's going to give him like 7, 8, 9 minutes a game, and then he won't even play in third period.
Yeah.
He's never going to see a third period.
No. They'll go three pairs during the game, during the first two periods, and then you'll almost exclusively see Keith Seabrook, Chalmerson, and Oduya at that point, almost for the third period of games. And again, in the end, that could be a serious problem for Chicago. In the end, it's a tough spot for me because I really do like a lot of elements of the Ducks here, and I think I could very easily see them beating Chicago. But again, I have to actually physically my phrase is with Chicago, you know, you've got to kill them. You got to put.
But they're
them
not
away.
Winning
they're
the cup
team.
Every
they're just
year.
Like,
they're not.
What's that?
They're not winning a cup every year. I mean, you've seen them getting beaten.
No,
before.
They're not winning the cup every. But they're no, exactly. But they've been there and they've got two cups to their credit here, and they've got, you know, the majority of their lineup has been through the experience and been through through a lot of the wars. But yeah, there's something to be said potentially for the old tire tread beginning to wear out. And I think there's something to be said for that. And there were times in the Minnesota series where I think they had some concerning moments, even with their performance. So, but again, until I see the Ducks put them away, it's tough for me to pick against them.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a couple of minutes here and talk about the poor Ottawa Senators. I mean, with all the health issues they've had this year, now it comes out that Eugene Melnyk is awaiting a liver transplant, and apparently he's gotten like 1,000 phone calls for potential donors. And that's a tremendous thing. I could tell you that, my wife used to work for a place called Gift of Life, which is here in Philly, and it's an amazing place.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's an amazing thing to have happen for somebody where they do get this second chance at life. And, you know, Melnyk's only 55 years old. You know, whether you like him or you don't, he's rich. Yeah, I get it. But, you know, it's the old adage that if he doesn't get this liver, it doesn't matter how much money he has, right? because he won't live very long.
Right.
And
I mean,
so I really
whatever
wish
it is,
him
again,
the best.
The situation
yeah.
is. Yeah. It's a severe situation. It sounds. I mean, the way it was, when as soon as I heard as it was coming out, it was like, yeah, we need this like now, and it's like, whoa, it's
right.
like this is. It sounds to me like it's sudden. Like it's not one. You know, that you could tell during that press conference is like they're, you know, that they're just stunned by this.
Yeah.
You know, Cyril Reeder and everybody else with the organization, and on top of what's going on with Brian Murray. Who's looked, you know, healthy, but and everything, but we all know that could, I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, that can just come up at
it
any
could
point.
Change. Sure.
It could change. So it's been, I give full marks to the Senators for being as resilient a team as they are, but again, this is, you know, as tough a situation as you could possibly imagine in terms of, you know, this is the guy who's, you know, the guy who sets the tone for the organization, all of a sudden, he could be, you know, who knows what might happen here. If, and, you know, the time is of the essence, and hopefully things do work out for him.
Yeah, poor guy's been dealing with health issues since January, it seems, and then 3 weeks since for this liver issue. And the big thing is it's hard to find a match. You know, I don't think the average person realizes how hard that is. And I know some people think, well, if you have money, you could jump to the front of the line, blah, blah, blah. And it's not really like that. But it is very hard to find a match, and that's why I hope he finds one in time. I do.
Yeah. Same here.
Now, let's put odds on something, because we saw Ryan Callahan out there skating,
mm-hmm.
and again, in my family, we've had somebody have an emergency appendectomy and get laparoscopy, and, you know, 3 to 4 days later, they're back at work, but they're not skating and playing hockey and getting hit. Is he going to really play game one? I mean, I know we're talking about a hockey player here, but I got to believe he's going to miss one game, right? I mean, or is he really going to play? It's crazy.
Again, it's going to be one of those things where, and we've talked about this before, at least with appendectomies, is that it comes down to, you know, it really does come down to the person's personal pain threshold in this case. And,
right.
And if he feels enough that he can get out there, I mean, there's a lot of people I've seen who've been able to come in, they've had the appendectomy done, and to do things. I think we've had some examples of some athletes who have come back from appendectomies relatively quickly. But again, would it surprise me if he's out the first game of the series? Certainly not. But if he's out there skating, that certainly wouldn't be a surprise either. Again, everybody's tolerance is different, especially when it comes to something like this.
Now, you know a little bit about medicine. Is it at this point an oxymoron to say anything other than an emergency appendectomy? Is there ever a situation where it's not an emergency?
it always seems like it's
an emergency, right?
I guess in the circumstance where if you really start to feel certain when the symptoms are onset at that point where you really got to get it in there. I mean, sometimes it may show a little bit of something and then you get it. But, yeah, is it always seemingly referred to as emergency appendectomy? Yeah, because it's just something that's acute. It's so quick. And you got to go and take care of it as quickly as possible because it can be a really dangerous situation, obviously. So for Callahan, again, hopefully
it pops up anywhere. It could happen anywhere, and you don't know that you even have it going on. And then all of a sudden, you got to get to a hospital. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it happened to my wife when she was a kid. I mean, she had an appendectomy done. So, I mean, they got to very quickly take care of it. And, again, in Callahan's case, it was, you know, a shock to the system for a lot of people when they heard it. And then when they heard he was I heard he was out on the ice skating, and you get the usual, hockey player thing. But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, it's that. But at the same time, this is not unheard of that a guy can come in and play afterwards. And
no,
again, we'll see. We'll see. Certainly going into if he's going to play game one, it would be fascinating to see Captain Cali back out on Ranger Ice again. against his old team, but we'll see.
It'll be fun, and that's going to wrap up this edition of Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.